Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Pitch it to Belton. Gesicki in front, turns the corner, 25, first down, 20 to the 15, breaks free to the 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State.
Back to pass on the straight draw, pass time, down the middle of the field for Kirby, he's got him on the run, to the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Chekalemi.
Belton in the Wildcat. Swings to his left, Donovan Smith in front to the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State.
Here's the handoff right side, McCreary to the 20, outside to the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Chekalemi. McCreary races off the right side, 30 yards to make it 13-0, Chekalemi.
Swinak the lone setback. Turns, Swinak left side, block from Mangiaro, touchdown, Penn State.
Calling for the ball is Schlegel. He'll keep it himself this time, has a hold of the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Chekalemi. He takes it to the house.
Swinak left side, Swinak, touchdown, Penn State. Brent Wilkerson, big block on the edge, and the Nittany Lions build the lead.
Schlegel. Hands it off, McCreary, right side, into the end zone, touchdown, Chekalemi. McCreary with his second score of the ball game, and with 3:38 remaining in the third, Chekalemi extends the lead 26-0.
Shotgun, throws in the end zone, caught, touchdown, Penn State. DJ Crooks' first career touchdown pass to Brent Wilkerson, who scores his first touchdown as a Nittany Lion.
And today's show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And Kevin is driving a Ford Escape this week, courtesy of Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, K-Roots 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
That's right, the Ford Escape Titanium Edition is what we'll be featuring this week. Lots of great little added features in there, including heated seats, but the tow package makes it available to tow about 3,500 pounds, so you can easily tow a boat behind you. You can also have the kick-open lift gate, so you just stick your foot underneath. It opens the lift gate for you, automatically can close the lift gate as well. And the best part is it's all-wheel drive, and it will automatically switch into all-wheel drive if you start slipping and sliding. So when the snow flies, you'll be all set to go without having to do what we used to do in the 80s and in the 70s. Remember, you had to put the car in park and then go out and unlock all the hubcaps and change it all around? This one does it not only on the fly, but without any assistance whatsoever.
You're lifting hubcaps?
I didn't mean lift them. I said flip them. You'd have to flip the hub. You remember having to do that?
I mean, no, I'm just concerned that, Timmy, that you were roaming the streets lifting hubcaps.
No, only if they matched what I had. And I was missing one, of course.
How disgraceful.
I'm not proud of it.
No. But if you're at a certain university, the baseball coach would suspend you. All right.
Only for a quarter.
Okay. Let's get to the Steelers. What a performance. Last night. Wow, were they good. Very impressive stem to stern. And our weekly guest steps in to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Welcome, great to have you with us. What a performance last night, huh?
Hey, glad to be with you. Always excited to talk about a Steelers win.
Well, here you are. You've watched the tape twice. So what did the tape tell you, Dave?
Well, the tape told us that the Steelers got off to a slow start offensively. They shot themselves in the foot a few times with the penalties, which is starting to be a common thing that we're talking about here as far as penalties go. But, you know, they stuck with the running game. They stuck with the run game alternatives via, you know, the bubble screens that I know drives the fan base crazy. But, you know, the defense was able to get a few stops in that first half. They went into halftime 9-3 with the lead there, and big turnover there early in the second half, and things just snowballed from there, and the running game really, really got going, and that was good to see. You would like to see this team start putting up some more points, offensively early in the game, because that will in turn make this defense that still has some problems, still has some warts, even better moving on throughout the season. And to wrap things up, the Steelers did suffer three key injuries on the defensive side of the football last night.
Well, let's talk about those three and which ones really affect the Steelers more than the others.
Well, we've got Jarvis Jones has sounds like a dislocated wrist, and he's going to require surgery on that. I'm no doctor. I only play one on Twitter, but I would guess that's going to be 6 to 8 weeks at the minimum. And with him out, you would expect Arthur Motes, the free agent that they signed from the Buffalo Bills during the offseason, to step in there at right outside linebacker. Next on the list, you have Ike Taylor, who broken forearm thanks to friendly fire by Lawrence Timmons in that third quarter there. And boy, you had to feel for Ike as soon as he went down. This is a veteran, that's in the final year of his contract, and you hate to throw it out there, but that very well could have been his last snap in a Steelers uniform. So we'll have to see how that goes. You would have to think he's going to need surgery. We'll see. They have this designated to return. They can put one player on the injured reserve with a designated to return listing. We'll see if either Jarvis Jones or Ike Taylor, if they think either one of those two can make it back and place either one on that list. And in the meantime, with Ike Taylor out, I would expect William Gates to start opposite Cortez Allen. And really, we'll have to see what happens in the nickel situations there. You might have Antoine Blake, who played last night opposite Cortez Allen when the Steelers used their nickel and William Gates went back into the slot as the nickel. Or we could see something. Bryce McCain during the offseason, they claimed B.W. Webb off of waivers from the Dallas Cowboys right there at the final cutdown. Both those guys have the ability to play in the slot as well, too. And if that's not enough, rookie inside linebacker Ryan Shazier suffered what they're calling an MCL sprain of his right knee. And, boy, it sure doesn't sound like he's going to be ready for the Tampa Bay game. So we'll have to keep our fingers crossed and just hope he's not down an extended amount of time. And in the meantime, third-year linebacker Sean Spence will likely get the start in his place. So, more than anything, what hurts this team is depth-wise, because I think they're going to have to go out and either promote Howard Jones off of the practice squad or maybe bring someone like Vic Saota, who is with the team throughout the offseason and then up until the final preseason game, because they don't have a lot of depth at the outside linebacker position.
Right. Offensively, let's talk about the offensive line, Dave. They certainly plowed the road. The long run by Le'Veon Bell, was that as good a double team as you're going to see?
Double, 22 double, they like to call it. That run's been in the books forever and a day, and it's nothing new, but I dare you to find that play blocked as well as it was last night. You hit on it. Double team blocks up front by Cody Wallace and Marquise Pouncey on the left side of the line, and on the other side, you had DeCastro and Marcus Gilbert double teaming. You had two tight ends in the game, and Heath Miller and Matt Spaeth, nice single blocks there, and Will Johnson, who had motioned over from the left side of the formation, squaring out his guy there. And Pouncey got off his block to the second level and got a nice hook on Thomas Davis. And at that point, you have a back in Le'Veon Bell who's patient. And because of his, Le'Veon Bell's a tall back, kind of reminds you of Eddie George. And his ability to look over that line of scrimmage there and read Luke Kuechly, trying to make the run feel. Really, it was a poor feel by Luke Kuechly, in my opinion. But as soon as he went to his left, Le'Veon cut it back to his left and, off to the races at that point.
Antonio Brown, can you put a team where you look for a number one receiver? Can you put a price on the variety of ways that they're finding him the football right now?
I really can't. And there's not enough adjectives, to use on what Antonio Brown means to this team. 10 targets last night, 10 receptions. He's now gone 19 straight games with at least 5 catches and at least 50 yards in the game. He has a chance to break Lavernius Cole's record against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this guy just never quits. And he's doing a lot of what he does with his yardage, comes with the football in his hands after the catch as well, too. It's just not like Antonio Brown is a go deep guy. He's a guy they use on these bubble screens quite a bit. And you just cannot give him enough credit. His ability to work open, he knows how to play with quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, who we saw a couple times last night. Ben's going to be Ben, and he's going to extend the play. And Antonio Brown got open and registered a pair of 7-yard touchdowns in the winning effort last night.
You referenced Le'Veon Bell, who had a big night. Is there a better closer when you have the lead in the fourth quarter, though, than LeGarrette Blount?
Boy, when they signed LeGarrette Blount, I think this is exactly what they had in mind right here. Le'Veon Bell is a guy, if things go well this year, you don't want Le'Veon Bell to tote the football 300 times during the season as far as actual rushes goes. Now, he might touch the ball over 300 times when you add in the receptions, because let's face it, he's great out of the backfield. But that 300 number is a magic number when it gets to running backs and being almost too much work for him. What they hope to see moving forward is probably what you saw last night. Wear a defense down, bring in LeGarrette Blount, 250 pounds. Those defensive backs late in the game when they're losing, that's the last thing that they want to tackle in the secondary. And Blount has done that for his entire short career. And, boy, both backs over 100 yards. We haven't seen that since 1986. And that's a reason to celebrate. And, hey, tip your hat to Mike Munchak, new offensive line coach, and the work that the big uglies did up there up front for the Steelers last night.
Yeah, they've drafted well there, and now they're coached well up there on top of it. So it's a combination, I think, of maturity and coaching that's made a huge difference with them as time goes. When you look at Tampa Bay coming up, they were destroyed Thursday night by Atlanta, 56-14. When you look at them, Dave, what do you see? Because Lovie Smith wants to hang his hat on defense, and they got torched.
Yeah, and their offense is really underachieving right now. Plus, they've got an injury at quarterback. Mike Glennon's probably more likely going to have to start against the Steelers on Sunday. I think Lovie's going to get it turned around there eventually. He's a great coach, but to think that he's going to turn it around in one season, especially in that division that they play in, is going to be tough. They came out very – look, I thought they were – I didn't think they'd beat Atlanta, but I thought they would for entertainment purposes only, I thought they would keep the game close, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But they didn't, and this is going to be one fired-up bunch coming to Pittsburgh on Sunday. It does sound like they're going to get the muscle hamster back, talking about Doug Martin, a running back.
Right.
The other little back of theirs is shifty as well, too, talking about Bobby Rainey.
Rainey, yeah.
They've got a couple of big receivers over there, Vincent Jackson and the rookie Mike Evans, and those two guys could be some matchup problems. So the Steelers, if they get a lead on this team, and if they can keep either one of those quarterbacks, for that matter, behind the chains, I'm talking about second and eight, third and seven, third and nine, instances like we saw them do in the second half against Cam Newton, I think they'll be fine. But if you get into a close ball game with any team in the NFL, let alone Tampa Bay, you're setting yourself up for a loss.
Dave, when you sit down and watch tape, in reality, how close are NFL teams talent-wise?
Boy, they're close, and really, I like to track what's called the TOX stat, T-O-X, and that's a differential of turnovers and explosive plays,
right.
Explosive plays being 20 yards or more. And, I've tracked this stat for years, and if a team comes out of a game with a +2 differential in explosive plays and turnovers, they're going to win the ball game 80% of the time. It's a proven number over time, and I hate to say that you can boil down a game just to that, but the stat speaks for itself, and you'll be hard pressed to find a stat with a ratio of an 80% win ratio. To answer your question, yes, I mean, these teams are talented, and we see how injuries from one week to another can really, really shake up an NFL team, because you would think with all these kids coming out of college every year and teams replenishing during the draft, that, you know, you would have some stacked 53-man rosters out there. But with the age of the salary cap, of course, it doesn't allow you to stockpile, you know, good teams. You know, Seattle's fortunate. They're one of the few teams that look like they're going to be able to keep a nucleus together for a few years, though. But mediocrity is alive and well in the NFL, if that's what you're asking.
Well, but the other part, too, is Seattle can do that because Russell Wilson, as a third-round draft pick, gives them financial flexibility to keep the roster until his contract is up.
You're absolutely right. When you don't have the albatross of that big, $17 million a year cap hit staring you in the face, you can spend that money in different areas on the team. Sooner or later, though, if you've got a good quarterback, you're eventually going to have to pay them. So, you know, in the meantime, that window is wide, wide open for the Seahawks. But, you know, however, if they have another good season this year, Russell Wilson's gonna want to get paid here pretty soon. So, I think any team, if they draft right and develop their own talent and manage their salary cap effectively, they can have a good two or three, year run in the NFL. But, you know, let's face it, we just don't see these days.
So the Steelers in the second half last night looked like the first half against Cleveland. So where are the Steelers to you? Are they closer to what we saw in the second half last night, or is there somewhere in between?
To be continued. It was obvious that they did some great things on offense, especially running the football. You'd like to see them knock out those penalties. Carolina kind of played into their hands last night with a running game. They only ran the ball five times in the first half. And this is a team, against the Steelers defense that has been horrible against the outside zone. Luckily for the Panthers, they're not built to run the outside zone. Plus, they were down D'Angelo Williams last night. They were down Jericho Cotchery, who, like it or not, even at his age, is a great run-blocking wide receiver. So, you know, by them not running early and not establishing the run, I thought it didn't set a good tone for them. Now, they still kept the ball game close in the first half. I thought Cam Newton was effective passing the football early in the football game. But once they got down there, once the Steelers' defense kind of starting at that Jarvis Jones strip sack early in the third quarter there where the Steelers took over possession and eventually punched it in there. Once they got down on the scoreboard, that's what you hope to see because the Steelers' defense this year is going to have its warts all year. What has happened in the first 2 weeks of the season cannot be forgotten. So the way you make that defense better is your offense needs to get better. And, if they're putting points on the scoreboard, they're putting opposing offenses in predictable situations such as down and distance or just the sheer fact that they're, 10 or 12, 14 more or more points behind on the scoreboard really opens up what Dick LeBeau likes to do with that defense. There was one thing to be concerned about last night, and that's the fact that they gave up three explosive plays of over 30 yards, two of them ending in touchdowns in the fourth quarter of that game last night. When you've got that big of a lead, you cannot let people behind you, and that's exactly what happened. So, cautiously optimistic moving forward.
Week three done after tonight's Jets game with the Bears. Right now there are three 3-0 teams and three 0-3 teams. After that, everybody else has wins and losses. What does that tell you about the NFL 3 weeks in?
Yeah, you hit on it earlier there. I think there's only a few haves, only a few have-nots, and a lot of those other teams in the middle there. And you can see an instance, especially in the Steelers division this year, we're 9-7. Barring what happens with Cincinnati, because it's hard to turn an eye away from the start that they've gotten off to. But a couple of injuries and they come right back to the pack. Plus the Steelers still get to play them twice. I think you could see a lot of teams. Look, even New England's not the same New England team that we're used to seeing so far this season. We saw that Denver actually has some kryptonite that can be used on them as well too, and the Seahawks have proved that not only Sunday but in the Super Bowl last year as well too. So it's wide open in both of these conferences right now, and I don't expect really anybody to run away and hide.
Dave, an absolute pleasure. Appreciate the time as always. Very insightful.
Hey, you guys do great work. All right, thanks for having me on.
That's Dave Bryan, Steelers blogger. Great to have him on. He breaks down tape every week. And,
Boy, the doggone Bengals look really, really good. You know who's looked really, really good so far?
Bengals starting quarterback.
A.J. McCarron on the scout team. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
All right, Bucknell football next half hour with Joe Susan. Bucknell off to its best start in 17 years. They're 3-0 in Cornell at Mathewson coming up Saturday evening at 6. We'll talk to the head coach of the Bison, Joe Susan, next half hour right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. From the Sunbury Motor Studio, Steve Jones with you. More next half hour, but news next. Then Joe Susan, and Kevin puts a bow on all of it to close the show as only he can.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades, and they understand their customers' insurance needs. They're winners, without a doubt. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Been with us since day one. Proud that they're with us every Monday. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And Kevin is driving a Ford Escape this week.
That's right. We'll be talking about, we'll be featuring and talking about the Ford Escape all this week. All-wheel drive on the fly. So when things get slippery, you won't have to worry about being in control because of the Ford Escape Titanium Edition. We'll be talking about that, and I'll tweet about it and Facebook it a little later on this week so you can take a look at it.
Randy Gowden, Philadelphia Eagles, joining us tomorrow on the show. Now we talk about Bucknell football, their best start in 17 years at 3-0. We're joined by the head coach of the Bison, Joe Susan. Joe, welcome. It's great to have you back with us.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin. Do you guys know today's the fall equinox?
10:29 tonight.
You got it. I knew you would know.
I'm not staying up to celebrate it.
I knew you wouldn't know.
And you'd be right. I knew it was today. I didn't know when it was today. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
All right. You go into New Haven. You beat Sacred Heart. You put 36 on the board. So far, you put 100 on the board in three games. The kind of run-pass balance, do you feel like that you can turn to either one at either moment when you need it?
Well, one of the things that happened this week against Sacred Heart is that we knew coming in that they would load the box in specific formations. They're a man-to-man team, and our passing game was created with that in regard. And we knew that we would have to convert on some big plays because they're playing man-to-man. And our run game suffered for it. We weren't anywhere near as productive as we wanted to be. And some of that is they're playing an eight-man box.
Right.
So what it led to was that if you're going to play man, you better play it well or you're going to pay for it. And we were fortunate to take advantage of it with some of the bigger plays that we had in the passing game.
We talk about a pitcher getting into a groove, and as the game goes, they get tougher. If you don't get them early, you don't get them. Is R.J. Nitti giving you that kind of feeling as your pitcher at the quarterback spot?
He certainly is. You know, he's a kid that has done a great job of studying the game. He controls a lot at the line of scrimmage, which a lot of people don't understand, that he controls the run game and he controls protections. And he has done an outstanding job with that. Obviously, in controlling the protection, he's keeping his shirt clean. But making the right choices in the run game, and then there are times where we had a run that he checked to a pass, and one of them was the first play of the game where he threw a takeoff to Will Carter. And when you watch it on film, the kid landed in bounds with both feet, and they called it out of bounds. But, you know, those things happen with no replays. But he has become so much more composed and understanding of it's okay to throw it away instead of throw it to somebody. And that is really limited. You know, I think we're even in turnovers, which we haven't created many turnovers, but we created two critical turnovers this past week that the one Clay Ewell had in the third quarter basically totally changed the momentum of the game. And RJ's done a great job of managing it. And the other thing that I think helps him is he sees downfield well. And being a kid that's 6'4", 225 pounds, there are some throws he's made with pace where he's got somebody hanging on him, and it's just a tribute to his arm strength and how he's worked to shore up his technique. Coming in with an ACL as a freshman, he wasn't getting his core into his throws, and that's normal in recovery. Even you might be physically recovered, but you're not mentally recovered from an ACL. And he has really done a great job, and Mike O'Connor doing a great job of coaching him, but he has done a great job to become a better fundamental quarterback. He moves well in the pocket, and he throws equally well moving to his right and his left. And you've got to move the passing point in college football. Otherwise, they can direct their pressures to a point. And we will do that with our nakeds. We have a controlled role that we use. And it really helps us in protections. And he threw a field takeoff, Steve, to Bobby Kasslander for our first touchdown. That's the first field takeoff I've seen here. And a field takeoff in college is different because it's coming from the opposite hash. In the pros, the hash is really arbitrary because everything's in the middle of the field. When you throw a field takeoff and you throw it on time, it's good to see that. And what it does is sometimes defenses will exclude number one strong if you're on the hash because they don't think you're going to throw it to them. And they left Bobby Kasslander uncovered, and we scored our first touchdown. And that brings momentum back in. You know, we go down 10-0, but I told them that at halftime, after the game, rarely does a team play any game or, you know, a series of games where they're not playing at some time from behind. And it's a tribute to the kids and our coaches of keeping the kids composed.
Back to RJ at the line of scrimmage. Everyone can see the result as the play occurs, which you just talked about. Pre-snap, the ability to identify something as simple as the mic, slide a protection, identify a hot. And you have to really do that in a span of 5 to 10 seconds, correct?
Right. You know, one of the things that we've done since Darnell Stapleton's come to us, and it's something that I'm familiar with, is we let the center ID the mic. the quarterback has the final say if he wants to re-mic it. And that's helped. That's the center's ID in the front and the mic. That's helped RJ a lot because he goes and he knows what the center's thinking. And if you're wrong, as long as everybody's wrong, everybody's on the same, you know, everybody's wrong at the same time. If you set the mic and everybody's playing to that, and it impacts our run schemes, it impacts our protections. His ability, because coverages change post snap, his ability to recognize those changes post snap has really evolved, and will continue to do so. The kid, you know, the player is a sponge in terms of football. He wants to study the game, and that is so important at this position. And now what you see is his being a lot more confident that it's his huddle. And that is when you feel good about your quarterback, regardless how many seniors have on that front. If they see the confidence he has, it just feeds them because you know they have so much confidence that he is going to get he's going to throw the ball on time. He's going to be where he's supposed to be in the protections. And last week was a challenge of protections because they brought people from all over the place. And it's going to be the same. That's how college defenses are now. You know, if they sit and play defense, all you got to do is run at him. But it's been it's what I thought RJ would be able to do, but thinking it and doing it sometimes are two different things.
Talk about the season Evan Byers has given you so far, and Clay Ewell was named the player of the week. What have the two of them brought to the table for you?
Well, I spoke to somebody about Evan today, and Evan is such a role model for how to do things, and it's on and off the field in his preparation as a football player from a nutritional standpoint, from a flexibility standpoint, from what he does in the weight room. We have to chase him out of the extra weight room because he'll come in after he lifts and then lift again. But Evan knows all levels of the defense, and that really helps him because he knows what everybody else is doing. And Evan doesn't say a word, although sometimes he'll talk to the opponent, which we try to we tell our players that that's a waste of time. You know, it's a waste of energy, waste of time. The best thing you could do is ignore them when they talk to you. And Clay Ewell, I think Clay Ewell played out of himself his first game. He tried to do too many things. And these last two games, it is who we thought Clay Ewell would be. And his interception, you know, It got us down to the one, and I basically, when I gave him the game ball last night, I said, you should hand this off to C.J. Williams because that's what you did with your interception. All you did was hand it off to C.J., and he actually got tackled by the quarterback, which you can imagine how that went over in the defensive film evaluation last night. But he is sudden. He tackled well. Playing against Kashada Spence, who's a 5'9", 240-pounder, you can't tackle that kid up high. You have to go low on him. And we frustrated their run game. They're a running team, and they had to revert to running the quarterback more. And I think I said this to Kevin, is that when you run the quarterback, he's getting hit. The other thing they did in the run game in the third and fourth quarter, They weren't getting ahead of the sticks, so they were running the clock. And anytime you run the clock, when you can run the clock when you have the lead, it's an important thing. We use the term milk. We got into that mode in the fourth quarter where RJ was holding them in the huddle till 15 seconds and snapping it at two, and that just eats up the clock as the game progresses, and it makes them more urgent to. Okay, now we got the ball back. We've got to do something now, and they take chances with the ball. It's people that don't know the clock or don't study the clock can be controlled by the clock. I've always gone by, if you don't control the clock controls you. And when you have a lead and you know it's time to start milking that clock, and you know, a lot of offenses don't have that mindset where they want to get the next play.
Right.
When you have a lead, you want to get the last play.
Right. What kind of leverage and quickness is Demetrius Baldwin, young boy, playing with right now?
He's a cat, and it's unique to watch him play because he's so quick in terms of getting off blocks. We're actually going to play him a little bit more on the outside this week because he's such a challenge to the edge and the offensive tackles we play against. The offensive tackles at Sacred Heart are big kids, and one of our things going in was to contain the quarterback, and what happened was that our defensive ends were using primarily a bull rush, which is right down the middle. When you're bull rushing a 6'8" guy, he just eats you up. Demetrius will challenge the tackles in this league with his edge quickness, and I think the evolution of Abdullah Anderson, Ben Schumacher, and Robert Naylor had 2 sacks to be able to play 3 inside players. It really bodes well for our ability to mix it up and have Demetrius on the outside a little bit.
Finally, give us a read on Cornell back home, 6 o'clock on Saturday night.
Cornell will be a team that comes in here feeling pretty good about playing against us. If you look at the record over my tenure here, it hasn't been good. But what I told my team last night, this team, our team, has not yet beaten Cornell yet, all right? And that, I mean, this year. And they're well prepared. This was their first game against Colgate this past week. Colgate ran the ball very effectively against them. I think we'll get back into being able to run the ball more effectively. They do not consistently load the box. They're trying to find the best quarterback. They played 3 last week, and it'll be interesting to see what they do as this week goes on and who shows up as a starting quarterback, because they didn't get a great deal of productivity from the quarterback. Their offensive line is big and athletic. I know they'll try to start out by running the ball. I feel confident in our ability to stop the run. One team primarily. We've got to take advantage of what we can in the passing game within the zones. And when you change from playing against a man-to-man team, playing against a zone team, you have to be smart about what you're trying to do, because a lot of the crossing routes just become eaten up in the zone. So we have to be smart in our route definition, smart in our timing and our route depth. But it's great to be home again. You know, it'll be family weekend here. I always feel, and Kevin can attest to this, we had an outstanding crowd on our sideline last week. Players play different when they know their parents are in the stands or their friends are in the stands. And,
yes,
you know, to have somebody to go to right after the game is something special. When I played, I knew my parents were there. In fact, when I played, my brothers once snuck my right guard and myself 2 hot dogs. At Delaware,
just 2?
There's hedges. And we had just down 2 hot dogs, and Coach Raymond, my head coach, got upset with something. He put us both back in, and we're on the field with 2 hot dogs in our stomach. And the mouthpiece did not taste good from there on. But
I was going to ask, how'd that go for you?
And, you know, it was a game that we were, the upperclassmen were sitting by the early part of the third quarter, and we figured, okay, let's get the hot dogs going. And my brother snuck underneath the hedges, and then all of a sudden we're back in, and you know, it was a hot day, and the mouthpiece backs up on you. But I'm not sure I should have said that, but we wound up winning the game, and I learned not to eat the hot dogs till after the game.
And I thought we got off to a great start by saying that autumn began at 10:29 tonight. All right.
All right.
Joe, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Best of luck. Congrats on what you've done so far, but a lot more work to do.
Thank you, Steve. You got it. Thank you, Kevin. You guys take care.
You too. Head coach of the Bison of Bucknell, Joe Susan, will come back. And Kevin Herr will put a bow on all of it, as only he can.
Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Biscotti, who's the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, who, by the way, I believe went to school with Sandy Barber, Penn State's athletic director, has been holding a press conference in which he has refuted an ESPN investigative report into the team's handling of the Ray Rice domestic abuse case, claiming that the story was manufactured around the accounts of the running back's inner circle. He had a news conference today. He said that the Rice camp is attempting to build a case for reinstatement. ESPN released a statement following shortly after Biscotti criticized the Outside the Lines report. He says, "We stand by our reporting." They reported Friday that Biscotti, Ravens president Dick Cass, and general manager Ozzie Newsom tried to persuade NFL commissioner Roger Goodell to be lenient on Rice following the February arrest. I believe that report also says that John Harbaugh wanted to cut Rice right away. Now, you've seen Harbaugh. The poor guy's been run. If that's the case, they've run him out there to support all of this since July, and he's the guy who wanted to cut him right away. Minutes before the news conference, the Ravens owner issued a lengthy rebuttal to Outside the Lines. Harbaugh said he did not recommend cutting Rice after seeing the first videotape. As Outside the Lines said, he had urged his bosses, "I did not recommend cutting Ray Rice from the team after seeing the first videotape." That's the first one. Okay? "Neither John nor anyone else ever recommended cutting Ray Rice before we saw the second videotape September 8th. Ravens director of security denied that he received an account of the incident within hours of the incident. In the statement, he said that within a couple of days, he asked the casino and the Atlantic City police for a copy of the videotape and was turned down. He said that on February 25th, the police department official offered a view of the tape and described what he saw. He said the official described both of them as intoxicated, but that the officer could not tell from the video whether Ray had slapped or punched her, but Ray told me very clearly that he did not punch her. Newsom said that he and Rice talked, and the Rice told him that he hit his then-fiance, but that they did not discuss details beyond that. Biscotti and Cass denied that they lobbied the judicial system in New Jersey, or that they lobbied Goodell to go easy on Ray Rice. Team denied it knew in advance that Rice would be suspended. Biscotti said he exchanged text messages with Rice after he was released and released a transcript. Right now, we have... Bring the music down a second, will you? Bring it down, okay? Right now, here's the issue. Hey, all the focus has been on Roger Goodell and the Ravens, right? Okay? Ray Rice is the one that hit her, not them. Okay? If you want to pick out the bad guy was in the elevator. We'll talk to you tomorrow.